This is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Wednesday, August 26th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, Burger King to McDonald's, Let's Make a Mac Whopper. New York. This probably isn't what the United Nations had in mind when it established the International Day of Peace. Burger King is asking McDonald's to join forces to create a Mac Whopper. In full-page newspaper ads Wednesday, Burger King says it's calling a truce with McDonald's so they can create a mashup of their most famous burgers, the Big Mac and the Whopper. Burger King says it wants to serve the concoction for a single day at a pop-up location in Atlanta, a midway point between the headquarters of the two chains. Burger King is trying to the publicity stunt to a nonprofit called Peace One Day, which says it promotes Peace Day. The United Nations created the International Day of Peace in 1981, to coincide with its annual opening session in September. It then designated September 21st as the annual day of nonviolence and ceasefire in 2001. In a comment posted on its Facebook page, McDonald's CEO Steve Easterbrook said the proposal was inspirational for a good cause, then took a dig at the ploy by Burger King. Let's acknowledge that between us there is simply a friendly business competition and certainly not the unequaled circumstances of the real pain and suffering of war, Easterbrook said. He added, P.S., a simple phone call will do next time. The proposed mashup of Big Mac and the Whopper would include elements of each, such as flame-broiled beef patty and a middle bun, according to a website Burger King set up. Burger King notes on the sale that it's open on the site that it's open to discussing the proposal, but that mandates we would have to be worked out in time for Peace Day. Proposals like McWhopper make noise, Burger King said in a video on the site. Burger King said the ads asking McDonald's about the proposal were to run Wednesday in the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune, the latter of which is based near McDonald's headquarters in Oak Brook, Illinois. Burger King, based in Miami, is owned by Restaurant Brands International, which also owns Tim Hortons. The next article is entitled, Bloomington Murder Defendant's Lawyer Defends Self. Bloomington. The lawyer for accused killer Kirk Zimmerman was granted a delay Tuesday in a hearing on the state's effort to remove her from the case so she and lawyers at her firm can consult with their own attorney. Kirk Zimmerman, 56, faces first-degree murder charges in the November 4th shooting death of his ex-wife, Pamela Zimmerman, at her Bloomington office. The McLean County State's Attorney's Office argues Stephanie Wong should be disqualified from handling his defense because he and two lawyers at that firm, Skelton and Wong, met with three potential witnesses, and Kirk Zimmerman before he was charged with the murder in July. Judge Scott Drazowski granted a defense request to continue the hearing until September 24th, to allow the firm time to meet with James Elmore, a Springfield lawyer who will represent the attorneys. In asking for the continuance, Wong argued that she may be called as a witness at the hearing, making it impossible to use Zimmerman's counsel and a witness at the same time. A Moroa Forsyth High School graduate who had become engaged to another man, Pamela Zimmerman was shot 4 times after she finished at 5:30 p.m. meeting with her last client on November 3rd, according to police. The 3 witnesses named in the state's motion to bar Wong from the case include Eldon Whitlow, who prosecutors say was Pamela Zimmerman's last client, and who also is likely to be the last person to see her alive. Her fiancé, Scott Baldwin, and a friend, Lee DeYoung, also are identified in the motion as witnesses who asked attorneys with Wong's firm to accompany them to the police station for interviews in the days after the murder. The presence of Steve Skelton at police interviews with Whitlow and Josh Rinker, another of the firm's lawyers, for the questioning of DeYoung puts Wong in a conflict of interest situation, the state argues. Wong's involvement with the investigation prior to Kirk Zimmerman's July 21st arrest included a phone conversation with Baldwin in December and her attendance at a July 22nd custody hearing for the suspect. Wong took notes as she sat in the courtroom with Zimmerman's girlfriend and filed her appearance as his lawyer before his July 31st arraignment. The state's request to disqualify Wong also delayed a hearing on a defense motion to reduce Zimmerman's $5 million bond. He remains in jail. The next article is entitled Parents Trying to Avoid the Legacy of Student Debt. Parents who are still paying off their student loans are determined to save their own children's college education to help them avoid repeating the vicious cycle of debt, according to a survey by the Washington-based College Savings Foundation. We are finding that parents, particularly in the millennial generation, are much better at delayed gratification and setting goals and saving to reach them, said Mary Morris, chair of the College Savings Foundation and CEO of Virginia College Savings Plan in Richmond, Virginia. Many have made saving for their children's education a priority. We find almost 1/3 of the survey respondents are saving with a 529 plan, and that a significant majority say saving is their number one strategy for paying for their children's cost of college. Nearly half of parents who haven't paid off their own student loans have saved at least $5,000 toward college costs for each of their children. The foundation's 9th annual college saving survey of more than 800 parents across the country at all the income levels found 82% of those with college debt said their own experience made them consider other strategies for their children rather than relying heavily on student loans or government financial aid. Reducing the burden of student debt on the children is important, said Pittsburgh financial advisor Robert Fragoso, although parents' number one priority during their prime working years should be to put themselves in a better position to retire securely. Ideally, you do both. Practically, we know that doesn't work for most people, said Fragoso, chairman and CEO of Fragoso Financial Advisors. High-earning parents could do both. Most parents can't, for the majority who can't. I would counsel pre-funding for their children for their freshman year in a 529 plan. After that, and once the children have established their grade record, they have a heightened chance of getting scholarships and grants, he said. Meanwhile, the parents can furiously pay their own student debt, and if there's any time left over once that's done, start pre-funding sophomore and other years for the kids. The idea behind this strategy, Fragoso said, is that colleges want to keep the most promising students in school and not have them drop out for financial reasons. Therefore, crossing the freshman year hurdle with good grades enhances the opportunity to get financial aid. Morris said there are multiple reasons that student debt has become a multi-generational burden for many families. You have more people going back to college in later years to better prepare for the job market, she said. You would expect them to have some debt if they retained themselves later in life. Retrained themselves. Some of them want to go to college at a more traditional age, in their late teens or early 20s, she said. If they are still paying off student loans 30 years later, they probably had some significant challenges in their adult life, such as job losses and illness, that made it hard to pay down the debt. What's encouraging is that many parents do not want the cycle of debt to continue, Morris said. And we get more awareness of 529 plans and the high cost of debt versus saving for college, we hope more families will be able to meet their higher education goals without undue student loan debt. The next article is entitled, Evolving Tractors Have Held Appeal for a Century. Mount Pulaski. Tractors have always plowed a deep furrow through farmers' emotions. Franklin Geisler, who grew up farming in New Jersey and later moved to a farm in Mount Pulaski, still has the green Oliver Super 88 that his dad bought new in 1956 for $3,600. A faithful workhorse that served the family well, he believes that letting it go today would be like selling one of his children. Now retired from active farming, he lives with wife Margie amid 400 rent-out corn and bean acres and a collection of some 55 tractors, mostly Oliver, dating from the 1940s through 1975. His wife, Margie, also grew up on a New Jersey farm, and included in the collection is the 1945 bright red Farmall tractor that was sold after the death of her father when she was just 14. The loss of that tractor got under the skin, and the family eventually tracked it down. It was still in New Jersey, and it finally took its place as part of the gleaming collection last year. Each tractor has a story, and I just enjoy them. The 74-year-old Franklin Gaisler said of his tractors, "And I enjoy fixing them. Always have." His wife said visitors who come to see and reminisce over the gleaming rows of machines they keep in a huge outbuildings are overwhelmed. Usually you hear, "Wow, oh wow," stuff like that, she said. I guess our tractors remind them of the good old days. Tractors of all makes and types began cultivating hearts and minds by proving their revolutionary usefulness down on the farm more than 100 years ago. Their ancestors were steam-powered portable engines that were busy doing farm chores in England as early as 1812. By 1859, some engines had been fitted with wheels and were self-propelled. For these developed steam power traction engines, which looked like mini locomotives with steel wheels and belching smokestacks. They caught on among farmers who could afford them and displaced plow horses with horsepower. The first gas-powered tractor was developed by American inventor John Froelich in Iowa in 1892. Froelich got a patent and formed his own company, but sales got a healthy, hearty thumbs down from his fellow farmers, and by 1895 he was out of business. Tractor development then switches back to the other side of the Atlantic, and the first recorded old-engined tractor sale was notched up in England in 1897. Historians credit the world's first commercially successful tractor as being built in 1901 by British inventor Dan Albone. It only had one forward and one reverse gear, but it also had a power takeoff for running accessories and could plow a field all day and all night and never get tired. It sold worldwide in droves. Americans weren't too far behind the curve, and the first successful tractor design here was built by Charles W. Hart and Charles H. Parr in Charles City, Iowa in 1903. These two guys came up with the name Tractor, and their machine's two-cylinder engine cranked out the same power as 30 horses. They built 15 examples of the 14,000-pound tractor model, and the one stamped number 3 is the oldest surviving internal combustion engine tractor in the nation. It's now parked far away from any field as an exhibit of the Smithsonian National Museum of American History in Washington, D.C. As the 20th century moved on, an Illinois company, founded by a clever blacksmith who had invented a polished steel plow to smoothly cut through the prairie sod, finally decided to take the plunge and get into the powered tractor business in 1918. Deere and Company bought a firm that made Waterloo Boy tractors and sold 5,634 of them that year. Henry Ford, who had broken into the tractor business a little earlier, sold 34,000 of his Fordson tractors the same year. Deere's engineers perished, however, and after some rough seasons, managed to hitch their wagon to a star with their model 1923 Model D. This two-cylinder machine was the first to bear the John Deere name and was destined to sell like hotcakes and stay in production for an incredible 30 years. As family farms gave way to even bigger operations and needed to make modern agriculture pay, the John Deere product line kept growing in size and sophistication to keep up. A 21st century visit to the Sloan Implement John Deere dealership, founded in Assumption in 1939, shows how far tractor power, comfort, innovation, and technology have plowed toward the final, have plowed forward in the shape of the 8-wheeled 8R/8RT and the 9R/9RT series, with engines up to 620 horsepower. Prices aren't cheap, escalating up to $400,000. But salesman John Sloan said, "You get what you pay for." Sloan is the great-grandson of the dealership founder, Rolla Chick Sloan, and his dealership is surrounded by rows of gleaming green machines that look like a tractor breeding colony. Sloan hops aboard one giant and climbs inside the heated and air-conditioned tractor cab with leather seating, banks of computerized controls, and entertainment system. Other optional accessories include a miniature fridge to keep the farmer's lunch nice and fresh. Sloan said engines up to 14.9 liters provide effortless momentum but greatly reduced emissions. Some people say the air coming out of the tractor is cleaner than the air being sucked into it, he added. His olfactory senses untroubled. Our modern farmer can sit back and lock in satellite navigation guidance with a Sloan dealership enhancement. Can let his tractor automatically drive itself up and down field rows laid out to accuracy tolerances of 1 inch. You can get within an inch, and you can come back to that same inch for eternity and never miss, Sloan said. So in the fall, you can lay your fertilizer down in a wide strip. He holds his thumb and forefinger slightly apart, and then return in the spring and plant your seed and hit the strip of fertilizer every time. The huge equipment your fancy new tractor is pulling around is also getting smarter too, Sloan said. High-tech planters, for example, are clever enough to know where they are and whether they are able to plant the same section of field twice. So it will automatically stop planting those particular rows so it doesn't double plant, saving the farmer some from wasting his money, Sloan said. All this technical know-how is no doubt attractive, but it's also hard to deny that modern tractors, with their 8 wheels, massive engines, and aggressive bull-nosed good looks, are aimed at winning the hearts as well as the minds of modern farmers. Sloan believes the brute's built-in visual appeal is far from accidental, and he said the power and sophistication lurking under the hood keeps right on accelerating as well. The agricultural arms race with rival manufacturers to harvest even more speed and efficiency shows no signs of ever slowing down. Every 3 or 4 years, there is another model with additional horsepower, Sloan said. Future tractors may, however, be ultimately destined to reap more leisure time than farmers ever had before to pursue interesting hobbies, such as, say, collecting and restoring beloved vintage tractors. I think eventually the tractor will be autonomous. It will operate itself, Sloan said. I know John Deere is working on it. The next article is entitled, Family Event Matches Help to Needs. Decatur. Timothy and Tawana Hunt haven't been to the Children's Museum of Illinois nor Scoville Zoo lately, but they have two good reasons to think about going back. They are identical twin girls, Samia and Sania, age 6 months. The family of four was among more than 130 people who turned out for iGrow Macon County's Family Fun event Tuesday at Old King's Orchard Community Center. Tracy Durham, acting community systems developer for the Early Childhood Development Home Visiting Collaborative at the Macon County Health Department, said she wanted to create a one-stop shop for expectant moms and families with children from birth to age 5, so they could see all that's available to them in the community. The 30-plus vendors included social service agencies, healthcare providers, and fun places to go. Several brought some fun with them, too, including Baby Talk, which gives families the chance to make their own books, Boys and Girls Club of Decatur, which has a beanbag toss, and Healthy Farmer Families Illinois, which brought face paints and props for photos. Timothy Hunt had a flower painted on his cheek to amuse his baby daughters. "This is a good idea," he said. "I don't know about all this stuff." The iGrow Macon County program is an umbrella organization over Healthy Families Illinois, the Decatur School District's Early Beginnings Program, and Bright Start of Macon Resources Incorporated. Helping Durham at the check-in table was Rita Kendall, the new supervisor of Healthy Families Illinois. Other vendors included Anna Waters Head Start, Child Care Resource Service, Community Health Improvement Center, Decatur Housing Anthony Dove Incorporated, Familia Dental, Growing Strong Sexually Assault Center, New Life Pregnancy Center, Northeast Community Fund, and Safe Kids Macon County. 2-year-old Tamaya Smith was among many children who tried out the money booth provided by Land of Lincoln, but was the first to insist that Carrie Meisner, business development manager, go inside with her, while a fan blew dozens of play money bills into the air around them. The toddler's mom, Felicia Bell of Decatur, said Franklin, the 4-year-old Dutch rabbit brought to the event by the Scoville Mobile Zoo, was Tamaya's favorite. "We have gone back there 7 times, Bell said. She can't get enough of it, but there is a lot of good information here for me as well." And that's the end of part 1. I'll be back with part 2 after the break.